This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu, and you're listening to Enterprise. eNation 2021, organized by Magic, aims to deliver the technology and innovation agenda by inspiring the movers and shakers of the startups ecosystem to ignite and embrace the theme Future Fast, Thriving for a Better Tomorrow. Back for Series 2 under the umbrella of People, Planet, Profit, the Outer Balance will be held on June 24th. I'm here with Micah Aimé Dahman, who is the co-founder of the Excess Materials Exchange, EME, a marketplace where companies can buy and sell any type of excess material and or product, and she'll be speaking at the event. So, good morning to you.
Good morning.
All right. Micah, I was listening to your talk on YouTube about turning trash into cash. I love that. And that EME works to reduce waste by actively matching supply and demand materials that would otherwise be considered waste. More importantly, it matches materials with the highest value potential to create continuous material loops. How does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we describe ourselves as a dating site. And currently, companies throw away lots of materials that other companies can still use. And if we make sure that other companies can find these materials, then we actually generate a lot of additional financial means for them, but we also really reduce the environmental impact. And a very easy example of this is coffee leftovers. So the majority of the people drinks coffee, and when you make coffee, you have the leftovers. And you're not going to make coffee of that again, because then the coffee is not going to taste very good. So you throw that away. And then, for example, in company restaurants or like on a big scale, you have a lot of leftovers and you have to pay to get rid of that. Whereas what you could also do is you could use it to extract pigment for ink or bioplastic or fibers, or you can grow mushrooms on it. And you can do this in a cascade. And at every step, you get money from it. Plus, you're saving quite a lot of environmental impact. So what works for coffee leftovers actually works for the majority of the material streams that we have, like steel, textiles, plastics. And yeah, we thought, okay, if this is possible, let's make sure that these companies can find each other. And therefore, we call ourselves a dating site. So we function as the matchmaker, because this coffee leftover for a restaurant, I mean, it remains a leftover there. And it's not the company or the restaurant itself that's going to look for pigment extractors. So we actually do that matchmaking.
Wow. Okay. So I've just poured down some leftover coffee, and you just made me very guilty. But I didn't realize that process where you could actually use it. You know, that there's a use for leftover coffee. I know you can put it in plants and all that sort of thing. But who knew, right? So with your exchange, then does it work like the highest bidder, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, the matchmaking is actually relatively complex, because there's lots of factors that come in play. Like sometimes people want something that's pink and fluffy, and other times they want something that has a load-bearing capacity and it needs to be a width of a meter. So, and then there's legal requirements in place. But what we as EME optimize for is that there is actually a positive business case and an environmental impact reduction. And we pay attention to the social impact. So we see that sometimes if we talk about circular economy, people are promoting something as circular, whereas it has actually been processed under extremely poor labor conditions. And we do not want to say that that is circular. So we do pay attention to that as well.
Right. And you know, I sent you some questions, but you just got me in a whole new direction, right? And of course, you're talking about how there is actually, I remember listening to your talk and you said there was gold in it, right? And to come up with this, right, to develop this EME, how long did it take for you to develop this? Because that's quite, it's not easy to make it look easy.
No, it's not easy at all. No, right. you're very right. And I think the reason that we did it is because we believe that the paradigm shift is needed. And we believe that companies are, like, millions of companies are literally sitting on like assets that they're throwing away right now that are worth billions. And I mean, the figures differ, but is really, really a lot of money and a lot of environmental impact. And no one was really taking up the task. And we thought, okay, we're going to check if it is possible. So how we started is that we said, okay, we're going to do a pilot with 10 big companies in the Netherlands. And we worked with Schiphol, the airport, Philips, the Ministry of Infrastructure, the company responsible for the railway tracks in the Netherlands, and like other companies. And we looked at 18 of their material streams. And we said to them, like, we all know we need to transition to the circular economy. Are you in for a test? And then we were looking for higher value destinations for their 18 material streams. And what we found is that we could generate an additional financial income of 64 million euros, that we could save energy, like equivalent to letting all the streetlights in Paris burn for 5 years, that we could reduce their carbon emissions by having all inhabitants of Amsterdam, where I live, which is about 860,000, drive in a car to Milan, which is a lot. So we could save a lot of environmental impact and generate quite a lot of money. And that really showed that this was not just a hypothesis, but it was really there and it was really possible. And with that, we could actually go on to explore further.
Right. And just to get that initial buy-in and this whole idea, how long did it take though?
Yeah, it took a while. Like when we started, people were like, but what, are you crazy? Like waste has a destination. It's just picked up. Like it's taken care of. Why would we bother to do anything else with it? It just takes time and money. So it took a while before people understood that. But I think the reason that we did it with big corporates, one is that actually they have the capacity to do something with it, but they are also under scrutiny from consumers more and more, or under pressure for legislation to actually do something with it.
Right. So, and of course, you know, we talk about the circular economy where you're a champion and advocate, and also, you know, generally a success, the whole adoption of circular economy in the Netherlands, right? And how, you know, the ability to get all the stakeholders aligned on, you know, what needs to be done to get the stakeholders aligned? Was it getting the private sector, you know, taking the lead and that kind of thing? Because I'm just thinking that, and this is Netherlands, I have a view of Netherlands being a little bit more progressive in that sense, but I just don't know whether something like this, right, that adoption, that speed to adoption will be done, you know, as quickly.
I mean, I wouldn't say is that quick here either, but I think what really helps is that we acknowledge that everyone plays a different role.
Right.
So the private sector plays a different role, but even within a company, you have like the design department, you have procurement of materials, you have the customer engagement, you have the recycling, the take back systems. So there's many different roles with the financial, the legal. It's all relevant if we want to transition to a circular economy. So what we do is we make sure that we get everyone aligned behind the bigger goal. And the bigger goal is the transition. But like, there's no roadmap for that. There's no,
right.
We don't know all the steps. And for every company is different what steps they need to take. So we're very clear about that. But we have this end goal in mind that we want to get and that they want to get. And then we break it down into little topic areas. So for a while before COVID, we organized working groups where we said, okay, let's look into the legislative requirements. And then we united with all these companies and the subject matter experts. And we said, okay, so what are you running into? What does legislation say? How can we find a way around it? Who do we need to involve? And then is people from the ministry, is like legal experts, is the company legal experts? So we made like little like cross-departmental working groups and cross-sectoral working groups to get this going. And I think that really, really helped.
Right. Okay. And you know, when I was watching your YouTube again, you gave some startling figures, right? And I think, was that conversation on how much money you can possibly make, how much money you can save, tax benefits, was that in the lingo, you know, and for people to first wake up and to see, wow, there is an opportunity here?
Yeah. So I think, well, the reason, I mean, I'm doing this work is because I care about the environment. That is my passion or where I come from. But to get people on board in the current paradigm, you need to talk about money. So we started off with the environmental story, and that got people triggered. But I think what actually pulled them over like the finish line to participate is the money figures. And they depend on the material stream, they depend on the location, they depend on the company. But it's like, we are flabbergasted by the amount of money that is actually involved in this.
Right. And the money that could, that's wasted and the money that can be made, right?
Yeah.
All right. And we'll continue our chat again in just a moment. I'm here with Micah Eme Adaman, and she's from EME, or Excess Materials Exchange. We'll continue our chat after this. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning. I'm Frida Liu. I'm speaking to Micah Eme Adaman from Excess Materials Exchange, EME. This is a marketplace where companies can buy and sell any type of excess material and a product. And she'll be speaking at eNation 2021 that's happening on June 24th. So, you know, for people who just join us, so what EME does is it facilitates frictionless transactions, enabling highest value reuse opportunities for materials. And it creates a transparent and reliable source of one of the few marketplaces that facilitate transactions across sectors and industries. You know, and you look at things like steel plates and textile fibers and even coffee, right? Can you tell me some of your clients or the types of clients that you have?
Yeah. So we mainly work with big corporates at the moment, because we see that this can be applied towards the consumer later on as well. But right now, they have the pressure and the appetite and the capacity to actually start with this. And then we're looking at relatively big waste streams that we can still do something with. So we see that there's a lot of interest in building and construction sector, in textiles, plastics, and then organics like coffee leftovers or orange peels. Yeah. So that's what we focus on.
How did you see behavior change with organizations because of the pandemic? Was there some aha moments because of the pandemic?
Well, I think first it went from complete shock and people canceling everything that did not in the short term generate cash. So I think initially we did not benefit from COVID at all, because cash is king in times of crises, and everyone was saving where they could. Whereas working with us, I mean, you're making a lot of money, but not next month. It takes some time to start working differently. But what we've also seen, especially from all the individuals now working from home, seeing all the effects that COVID has, I think that is like a huge catalyst for this change. And I love the vibe from talking with everyone. Like, I really started doing things differently in my house, looking differently at office work, differently at how we work in the office. So right. I think this is gonna launch.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because you just, you know, like I've never been in my house for so long and for so long, in such a long period. And you start looking at your things and you think, wow, you know, why is this here? Why, well, do I need all this? Right. And because you just sort of come in and out and not pay attention to what is, you know, potential opportunity right now. How is AI and blockchain used here?
Yeah. So, like, if you on a large scale, because that's what we want to create scale. If you want a large scale one exchange materials, you need to have information about these materials. So what is in it? Can I actually make a business case out of it? Like, if I don't know that there's gold in phones, like I can't make the business case to extract it, or I don't know how to repair it. So you need to know what's in it. But then if you want to match it to another company, that information needs to be available. Whereas that information very often is IP sensitive information. So people want to be careful with that. So what we do is we use blockchain to overcome this gap between the need for transparency on one hand and the need for privacy on the other. So we can actually make the matches still without publicly putting the information on the marketplace. So that's where we use the blockchain. Besides that, you can obviously trace all the materials through the supply chain from like the mine to next users and next users. And then why we use AI is that we as humans can make matches, but a lot of factors come in play, like the location, the timing, the price, the quantity, specific requirements. And AI, if you train it properly, can do it much faster and much better than we can. So with the idea of scale in mind, like worldwide, this is definitely the way to move forward. Yeah.
You're right. And do you have investors or looking for investors to expand this?
Yeah. So currently we have received subsidies from the metropolitan area in Amsterdam and from Stichting Doen. And we're investigating if we want to take on investors currently, but we don't have it as of yet.
Okay, now you developed the resources passport that's now being made into Dutch and European policy, and this passport is currently being used by the EME and many other companies to start mapping the economy's material metabolism. How does this work?
So, like a resources passport, you can compare to an ingredient list of food. So on food, you have a list and it says, oh, there's this in it, and there's this in it, and there's this in it. And for our products, we don't really have that. And if we have it, it's very high level, but it's not the detail that is required to actually repair it, to recycle it, to reuse it, to remanufacture it. So what we're doing, or what I developed, is actually a standardized system in which you can write down where the materials come from, what they're made of, how they're put together. Like, is it glued? Is it with a screw? This is all necessary information. And that travels along the supply chain. So it's modular. So you can start ideally, which we don't as yet, but you start at the mine. And with that, you go to the factory, and after use, after a consumer is done with it, for example, with jeans, and that ends up as insulation in your couch, or like to sit on in your couch, you can say, oh, you know, I'm sitting on a couch that has a jeans that was worn by a celebrity. Like, you can really actually track and trace it through the supply chain. And this passport is like necessary if we want to make matches on a large scale.
Right. Okay. Now, is EME Netherlands or European wide?
European wide.
Okay. Yeah. So, and you find that the uptake has been pretty much more in Western Europe, I guess?
Yeah, definitely. I think the thinking behind circular economy, understanding of the concept here is a bit more embedded than in other places as of yet. But we see that COVID did help.
Okay. Now, you've won various prizes and awards, amongst others, such as Emerging Innovator for the Ellen MacArthur Foundation C100 Network, Ashoka, and a scholarship to attend Singularity University, which is Google and NASA. You know, what were some of the learnings there and, you know, your experience there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the main learning that I had with any of these things is that we need to take a system perspective. And we need to work together for that. And everyone has their role to play. And the reason I say that, for example, is that within the circular economy, I heard the story once, like a while ago, that people were super proud to present recycled pizza boxes. So you get your pizza delivered in a recycled box. But then they forgot to check that the box was actually completely covered in flame retardant from the previous use, and they hadn't paid attention to that. So basically, you got your pizza served on some toxic box because they forgot to think before that and what happened before that. And this is like a tiny, tiny example. But I think it's very important to take like the whole supply chain into account, the whole network into account. And that is also why we look between different sectors for high value uses. And that's why we work with accounting and with legislation and with financial institutions all together to actually create a system that drives the circular economy forward. And without my experiences there, I think my understanding of the system that we work in would be less defined as it is right now.
And I think that we have been making inroads in terms of food safety, but not so much yet in product safety, so to speak.
Yeah.
Right? Right. Okay. You know, and I guess like people listening in and very excited, and I guess with what you're doing, right? How can I as an individual support this movement, start making changes in this space? Because I'm looking at you and, you know, it always starts with one person, right? And I'll say, oh, well, it's done in the Netherlands. It can never be done in Malaysia, right? That's a great excuse. So what can I do?
Well, I think like everyone is a consumer. So I think that's the easiest place to start. And I think as a consumer, becoming aware of what you buy, where is it from? Like, are poor labor conditions involved? Is there toxic materials involved? Does it come from conflict areas? That type of questions, I think we need to start asking so that people become aware of what are we actually buying? What are we putting into our environment? And thinking about where can I leave it after I throw it away? What is done with my waste? Just asking questions, because I see that pressure on companies from just asking questions really gives them the agency also to change. And then like everyone plays a role within a company or an organization where they can just pick up this conversation and discuss with colleagues like, hey, what could we do within our department?
Right. And again, you know, it never happens overnight, right? I mean,
no.
If you think of some things that have changed, you know, against animal testing and everything, it was just constant nagging, constant questioning, constant, you know, making these questions, right? That gets people to pay attention.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, we look forward to seeing you speaking at eNation 2021. I've been speaking to Micah Ayamadaman from EME, or Exchange, Excess Materials Exchange. You've been listening to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.